Hi, it's Megan Segura.
And Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
Hey guys, it's Eric J. Mack, and sadly, Megan is sick today, and since we have a long season of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills to come, we need her to get her rest. But we have so much to talk about, I swear I'm not going to let you down. We have the premiere of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, the finale of Real Housewives of New Jersey, big things happening on Vanderpump Rules, plus we have interviews with Real Housewives of New Jersey's Jennifer Iden and Patty Sanger. It is Valentine's Day, after all, so we caught up with the millionaire matchmaker who gave us some really interesting celebrity relationship predictions, so stay tuned for that. Plus, we have some really special holiday shout-outs from your favorite Bravo Labs. So Real Housewives of Beverly Hills is back, and before we get into that epic opening scene and the rest of the episode, let's talk about the taglines. Here they are.
In the game of life, it's Rinna take all.
Most people talk about their fantasies. I'm living mine.
In business and in life, I wear many hats.
And hairstyles.
You could stab me in the back.
But whilst you're there,
kiss my ass.
I'm not afraid of hard work, but I'll never do your dirty work.
My problem with the tabloids? My real life is so much juicier.
In Beverly Hills, the truth always has a way of rising to the top.
Rinna takes all. Okay, so I appreciate that one because I know that Lisa put out a call on her Twitter to get someone to write a tagline for her, and somebody actually won and wrote that. So I appreciate that. I like the idea of crowdsourcing your tagline because who better to come up with a tagline than super fans? So Rinna takes all. I appreciate that. Erica's pretty good. She's living her fantasy. We like to see that element of her, you know, performance life. So I think that's a good, solid, that's a safe tagline, I think, for Erica. Dorit's referencing her hairstyles. I do appreciate when Dorit does a little bit more cheeky reference to her accent and where that might be coming from. But I do have to say she always does have a different hairstyle. So it's pretty fair that at this point she gets a tagline that reflects that. Denise Richards, very, very interesting tagline. I like that she leans into the tabloids thing because that is a lot of, you know, what her life has been, you know, through Charlie Sheen and everything. But knowing that her life is actually juicier than a tabloid, I can't wait to see that unfold this season. Teddy's, I'm not so sure about. I don't like when they repeat words in one tagline because I feel like it's just a little bit too easy, and it's like, I get it, you know, you work hard, you don't want to do any dirty work, but lean into the housewives thing a little bit more. I appreciate the sentiment of Teddy's because she really is pretty straightforward and doesn't like to get into any dirty work. She doesn't twist words. She's pretty much as you see her, but I think the double hard work, dirty work, I think there was a better opportunity for a play on words there. We also get Vanderpump's tagline about being stabbed in the back. Like, are we referencing one person this season? Are we referencing multiple? I don't know what's happening there. But at the end of the day, she says, kiss my ass. So I don't think she cares who it is at this point who's stabbing her in the back. And Kyle's, she's always referencing either Beverly Hills or this town or how things work exactly where she lives. So apparently the truth rises to the top this season. So we're going to have to see exactly what Kyle's talking about in her tagline. So Real Housewives of Beverly Hills is back. And oh my God, that opening. So it sets up where you're like, this seems okay. We're at Villa Rosa. What's going on? And then all of a sudden you hear Lisa, you hear Kyle, you hear Ken. And there is absolute animosity in the air. There is something that's happening where we don't exactly know what's playing out.
No. Who says that? Say it.
This is a big shock to me. It's so blatant. I've done nothing wrong. Kyle, I swear on my children's life. If I did something wrong, that doesn't mean you wouldn't love me.
I am not going to say yes, I did something if I didn't do it.
Whatever. I didn't come here to fight.
You came here to tell me I am a liar.
You're not a friend.
To be honest.
She would never say that about you.
Maybe you care more about your image than your friendships.
You are not her friend.
Yes, I f***ing am.
Goodbye, Kyle.
Get the f*** out of my house. I swear to you, I'm done with it.
We come into the scene basically hearing them fighting in the kitchen. And we know just from the super tease that there's something really epic happening and there's some kind of showdown. But we don't really know the magnitude and everything that it's related to. So we hear Kyle yelling. We hear Ken yelling. We hear Lisa yelling. There's just this dark cloud over this scene. And knowing that it's happening 2 months after the premiere episode. So the scene ends with 2 months earlier and bringing us back to sort of present day. So knowing that everything that unfolds this season is going to lead to that moment, I can't even imagine how that's going to play out. After that epic opening scene, we kind of get into what everyone's been up to lately. And something that's really interesting is a lot of new houses, but a lot of new robberies too. Like, is there a new bling ring in town in LA? Because we learn, you know, not only was Kyle's house hit, but so was Dorit's. And Erica even mentions that it's happened to her before. So everyone's getting new homes, moving into new places, but they're also becoming the victims of robberies. So I don't know what's going on there, but at least we get a chance to really see Kyle's new house and how beautiful that is. Teddy's also in a new place. So, you know, she said that Edwin had his eye on that place for a really long time. They only moved like 4 houses down or something. So lots of new houses, lots of robberies going on. But what we really start to get into the episode is this whole situation with Vanderpump Dogs and Dorit and the adoption and how everything kind of went a little wrong and how the backlash has then affected Lisa and Vanderpump Dogs and I think ultimately all of the girls involved. With the dog situation, we learn exactly how it sort of plays out from both Lisa's perspective and from Dorit's. So basically, the order of events is that Dorit adopts a dog from Vanderpump Rules, where there's all sorts of contracts and agreements in place when you do this, gets the dog home and finds out that the dog is not a fit for the family. I mean, we see that the dog attacks PK. He has like a gash on his nose. Apparently, the dog kind of bit at the kids too, Phoenix and Jagger. So obviously, you know, any parent is going to be like, all right, this might not be a fit for our family. What Dorit did next was find another family that was willing to take the animal. So doing the right thing, or what she thought was the right thing, she gave over the dog to another family. That family then brought the dog to a separate shelter. And because Vanderpump Dogs has all of their dogs chipped so that they can keep track of them, they got alerted when this dog went to the shelter that it had been a Vanderpump dog. So we see this event sort of play out when they're stopping by to visit. We see Kyle, Teddy, Lisa, all at Vanderpump Dogs, kind of talking about the situation. Lisa's obviously super uncomfortable. She doesn't really want to talk about it. You can tell it's affecting her. When the situation comes up at Vanderpump Dogs, Kyle's sort of asking, what's going on here? They're referencing the dog. Everyone's being a little bit quiet because Lisa seems pretty upset by the situation. And I think we see her get very emotional later on.
I'm sorry, I love you.
I think she's just taking it out on you a little bit.
I know, it hurts my feelings when she does it.
I know, I'm a friend of her, and I love you.
I just want you to come back and see what I've been doing, and I haven't been coping
very
well. I
would love that.
Why am I crying?
I was away for 3 weeks. You were away.
I haven't been away. And I haven't been feeling good. I've been in London for the funeral for 5 days.
I was away, and I have shit going on with me, too.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I don't want to cry anymore. I feel like I've made such an idiot of myself down there now.
You're not making an idiot of yourself. Stop.
It's not like me to lose my shit. My shit is right down there by the door.
But that's what happens when you hold everything in.
I'm okay.
Yes, it has to do with the dog, but it's definitely the dog situation has triggered something bigger in Lisa, and that's her grief that she's going through with her brother. So we really get a moment of her on the stairs with Teddy and Kyle showing a real vulnerability that we don't see in Lisa very often. So the situation kind of unfolds there. You know, we learn a little bit more about Lisa's perspective on what happened. We know that at this point now, Teddy's aware of the situation because she's also friends with someone from Vanderpump Dogs, and he kind of spilled the tea to her earlier on, whether he was supposed to or not. Now Kyle's privy to the information and knows exactly what played out. So multiple people now are learning exactly what happened with this dog and sort of how it's affecting Lisa's relationship, particularly with Dorit. Later on in the episode, we get them going out to dinner and sort of rehashing the whole situation directly with PK and Dorit.
I know that you had no malintent or bad intention. I know that.
I think it's a very weird concept to say, I know you didn't mean. Of course we didn't bloody mean it.
That's why I've defended you.
At least I spoke to you the day after. I told you all about the woman.
You said a woman that had come to the house wanted her.
I spoke to Lisa the day after Lucy had left. We found this wonderful woman and this wonderful home. And I did it with the absolute best of intentions.
It's a mistake that could have been made by anybody.
Actually, PK, it's not, because that's what we do. We make very, very stringent rules and regulations so that that mistake can't be made. That's why we put in the $5,000 penalty so that
I understand, but it was made by your best friend. So it can be made.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be made. No.
Obviously, I signed the contract. Did I look at the contract with a fine-tooth comb? No.
They're all very passionate, and John Sessex...
It's not good for us either, Shelton calling us saying we've got a Vanderpump dog down here, so he lost his mind.
The thing is I'm pissed, and everyone here is pissed, and I've been dealing with this now for a week.
It got heated at the centre. Okay, I want you to know that. And I want you to know that I tried to shut it down. And I want you to know that people are talking about it.
That's when we kind of learn a little bit more of, like, the legal side of things and how there was a contract in place. And it sounds like, in a sense, there was something that, you know, perhaps Dorit and PK didn't sort of fulfill their part of an agreement by giving this dog to the shelter. But it also, I think, just set off something in Lisa and Ken, because they have worked so hard on Vanderpump Dogs, and they have for years and years and years worked to protect and save and for the rights of these animals. And I think when they learned that one of their very own ended up at a different shelter where they don't know what's going to happen to him, I think that hit home for them even more so than any other kind of situation, because they're... is a dog involved, and there's another life that's being affected. And I think it just probably hurt Lisa's feelings more than anything, but also was a little bit insulting to her and Ken and the work that they've done to start Vanderpump Dogs and all the work that they put into it. This is obviously going to continue to unfold this season, and we knew that we would get this at some point, so I'm really excited that we got this right off the bat. It was sort of the opener of the super tease, like someone's trying to get this dog story out to the press, so we knew it was going to be a big storyline, and we knew it was going to, you know, develop as the season went on, but we're jumping right into it, and we're starting to see exactly how it's affecting everyone, and who's involved, and who knows what, and what everyone sort of thinks about it, so this is really just the tip of the iceberg at this point. And of course, we cannot forget that we have a brand new housewife in the mix. Obviously, we all know Denise Richards. She's been a famous actor for a very long time, but now she is a part of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills family. So I was really excited to get her introduced right away. What I loved about it is she really just owned the whole Charlie Sheen thing. You know, everyone was kind of bringing it up to her, referencing how they know him. You know, Rinna talked about how they worked on a movie together and he was licking her toes in one scene.
We did this movie called Good Advice. I'm in the first scene with him. And do you know that he's licking my toes in that scene?
No.
No!
And everyone talks about their kind of connections to him. I guess Lisa had a car that was stolen, and so it was his, and it was driven off a cliff or something. Another example of crazy robberies happening in Los Angeles all the time. It's just, you know, crazy to think that everyone has some kind of connection to Charlie Sheen. So I'm glad that everyone sort of brought it up, and we're kind of getting past that now as she's introduced to the group, because I think Denise, just from what we've seen in the Super Tease, is going to be bringing a lot of drama this season on her own. I know we're going to see her wedding, and we're going to get to meet her husband or soon-to-be husband on the show. So that's really going to be interesting, and I'm excited that she's in the mix, and I don't know how she's going to respond to all of these women. Obviously, she knows a few of them going in, but there's definitely going to be a couple I think she butts heads with, so that'll be interesting. So this week on Vanderpump Rules, we got a little girl's trip to Solvang, but before we get into that, I wanted to point out how pretty crazy it is to see Ariana and Kristen hanging out together. You know, we really never got a sort of resolution in their friendship, given their history with Tom Sandoval and everything that we saw unfold in the past, that it really is kind of shocking to see them together and hanging out and having fun. And it's sort of like that tension is no longer there, but it's still just, it's right in front of us, and it's just crazy to see. So anyway, off to solving the ladies go. Lala, she's not even drinking, but she's willing to take the girls on a wine trip, which I think is amazing. But renting a jet to fly to Solvang.
What the F? Why did I wait so long to do this? Now that I've flown on a private jet, I'm going to name my firstborn PJ.
Now, as you guys know, I lived in LA for a short amount of time, and Solvang is about 2.5 hours north of Los Angeles. So granted, if you have access to a private jet, you're probably going to want to take advantage of it. However, let's think about the environment. I think this is an opportunity maybe to get the girls in a car, do a little road trip. I understand Lala wants to show her access to the private jet, but if you're going to be getting on a PJ, wouldn't you want it to be on a longer lasting flight than about 15 minutes or so? Because you get all of these luxury things and this ability to just post up and drink champagne, and you don't even have to wear your seatbelt. There's no flight attendants. Why not take advantage and go on a longer trip as opposed to just flying 15 minutes? You're pretty much up in the air and down before you even finish your glass of champagne. That's just my thought on it. Regardless, the girls were still having a great time popping bottles, enjoying their time on the private plane. Stassi says this is the only way to travel for her now, so maybe we'll be seeing a lot more action on the PJ this coming season. So when we get to Solvang now, it's a really quaint town. It's super adorable. You really do feel like you've got this tiny little piece of Europe that's like tucked away in Southern California. So it's definitely a great place for a girls' trip. The only thing that, you know, can turn pretty quickly on a girls' trip, which we do get a little bit of towards the end, is once the wine starts flowing and the ladies are feeling a little loose, perhaps a little crazy starts to come out. And I think we saw a little bit of that with crazy Kristen starting to unleash. You know, when you're at a winery and you're sampling all of these wines that perhaps everyone around you who works there has been working on for a long time, and they're very proud of their products, and you're starting to refer to some of their wine as like the basic bitch wine.
So this is Merlot.
They don't like really dry red wines. We're like, I'm like,
yeah, it's not real fruit forward.
I think Merlot is a basic bitch of wine.
Okay.
Okay. You know what? You can have your opinions. We all know that, like, we have preferences when it comes to what we drink, but maybe check yourself before you're about to start insulting somebody's products when you're standing right there enjoying some lovely samples of it. Is there, like, an etiquette you're supposed to have? Like, when you're going into these places and you're trying this wine, like, you know, you are allowed to spit it out instead of, you know, drinking every gulp, which is, that's how I do it, personally. But I think, you know, if she didn't like it, you can spit it out. You don't necessarily need to address that or, you know, insult the people whose winery you are enjoying wine from. I think there's a little bit of etiquette there that maybe Kristen is missing out, but I guess the liquor's just hitting her already early on in this trip. So next week, we're probably going to see a little bit more of Crazy Kristen unleashing on everyone. You know, we have that preview of her stumbling, which was in the super tease that everyone was sort of talking about when that first came out. So, you know, I think so far this season, we've seen like little hints of Crazy Kristen coming back. She was so hellbent early on really screwing James over and getting him out of, you know, the Tuesday night events. And now we're starting to see that behavior sort of expand beyond just James and into, you know, not being invited to the Daily Mail party and being upset about that. And now she's on the girls' trip, but she's sort of letting loose, perhaps more so than she should be. When the girls get to Solvang, you know, with most Bravo shows, there's always something about the room situation when there are trips involved. So we very oftentimes see a lot of the housewives, for example, fighting over who gets the single room, who gets the best room, who has to share, who doesn't have to share. But here on Vanderpump Rules, Sheena is pretty upset that she actually gets sort of isolated into her own room, whereas I feel like with most other instances, like, who doesn't want to have their own room?
Brittany here with Lala.
And Sheena has the...
Yeah.
The bachelorette hat.
Naturally, I assumed on this trip I would room with Ariana because she's my bestie, but I'm being singled out. I live by myself. I don't want to room by myself on a vacation.
So I think it's kind of just a little bit more reflective of, you know, where Sheena kind of stands with the girls right now. They're including her, but also making it a point to be like, you're still separate from us, which I think is a little, you know, shocking. And maybe this could have been an opportunity for people to bond with her again and maybe get her back involved in the group. So hopefully, you know, the rest of the trip, we'll see how it kind of plays out. But it seems from the start, we're already getting a little bit of Sheena being isolated from everybody else. While the girls are in Solvang, we see the guys getting ready for a guy's night. But what we also see more of is James and his situation with his family, which we've talked about a lot so far this season in terms of his responsibilities and given his age and his situation with his family, that it seems like there's a lot of pressure on him. And we start to see a little bit more of that and where it stems from, especially in the conversation that he has with his mother, which things kind of turn a little heated and kind of ugly at a certain point.
I'm sending you $200 every 3 days.
$200 every 3 days?
Do you want to see my PayPal?
Okay, fine. And what do I do with that money?
A little bit
more. I've got Dylan. I've got Harry. Was I a mother? You went to a 50,000-pound school a year, right? Great vacations. Ralph Lauren, Burberry. This is bullshit. You took your first steps at f***ing Tiffany's. I'm not telling you to kiss my ass. I'm saying, say thank you, Mom. You did something for me. You're not a total bitch.
But I think the really complicated part of that is that that's not his fault, and she can't really blame his upbringing on him because she was the one who did that. So just because you raised him in certain environments and bought him certain kinds of clothes and he was very, you know, name brand associated as a child, that doesn't necessarily mean that he has some kind of financial obligation to his family now when he's out there making his own money, he's trying to become his own person. You know, he's still very young, and it's sort of like if he's trying to experience life as an independent adult, but he still has to go back and support his family, I think they're kind of holding him back in a lot of ways. It's also nice to see that James was really receiving the recommendations from his therapist about how to cope with this situation with his mom and his dad. And he really takes her advice and puts it into, you know, effect when he brings it up to his mom and being like, we need to draw a line, we have to set boundaries. And I think that's so important as you get older and your relationship with your parents becomes more complicated, and, you know, in a lot of ways your parents start to learn from you the older that you get. So it was nice to see that James is really taking responsibility and he's trying to set boundaries and he's trying to make sure that at the end of the day that he is emotionally doing okay and he's able to continue on with his life, even though he knows he wants to support his family and cares about them. But at the end of the day, he needs to put his own emotions and well-being first. So we also see James a little bit going to bat for his brother, who is looking for a position. And Jacqueline also sits down with Lisa to bring up, you know, my other son is looking for a job too. Is there any way you could help him out? So it's nice that James and his family do have this support from Lisa and Ken and everyone at Sir, but it's also a little bit like, are they becoming too dependent on Lisa? And is she able, you know, we've seen in the past with Jackie being like, you're his mother figure. And she's like, no, you are, literally. So it's interesting to see how much they are relying on Sir and Lisa for, you know, helping their family get by. And Lisa even told us a few episodes back in her interview exactly how she's connected to James' family. And it's really interesting, you know, roundabout way that they're all connected. And it has to do with George Michael, which is really interesting. So go back and listen to that if you want. We have a link in the description, but it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. So we heard very early on that this was going to be an amazing season of Real Housewives of New Jersey, and honestly, it delivered. We saw tears, we saw broken glass, we saw muscles, we saw camels on the beach, we saw people falling into pools, or really getting pushed into pools. What a season. Basically, the season ends with Marty getting pushed into the pool at Jennifer's house by both Joe and Margaret.
That's my point. You're an emasculated motherfucker.
I think you're the one emasculated now, shithead. Your husband's in the pool.
What? Who threw my husband in the pool?
Me and my husband.
Oh,
low class.
Oh, my God.
We've seen that preview clip a couple times over the last couple of weeks, so we've been very curious as to who it was that gets pushed into the pool. And I have to say, I'm not totally surprised that it was Marty. I do have to say my first thought was he probably has his cell phone in his pocket, and I thought, oh no. Turns out he did, but he also had on a really expensive watch. His whole suit was ruined. I mean, that being said, did he deserve that? And my opinion is yes, because I think at the end of the day, And Margaret makes this point to him right before they push him into the pool, is that no matter how he feels about Danielle and no matter how Joe feels about Margaret, you cannot compare and you can't try to bring another woman down by talking another woman up. You know, Marty, at the end of the day, is looking like more of a chump than any of them at this point, just given what's happened with his relationship with Danielle, given the way he defended her so much. And obviously now that Marty and Danielle are estranged and things don't seem to be working out. So, you know, for Marty to sort of make that his last hurrah and to just sort of get pushed into the pool where it's sort of like Margaret says, look who's emasculated now, like you're the one dripping as you get out of the water. So, you know, I think it was a long time coming, and I wish Danielle had been there to maybe witness it herself. But I did love that we got that moment of Danielle being like, who pushed my husband in the pool? And Margaret just walks by with full confidence being like, me and my husband. Sorry, Marty, your suit got ruined. But lesson learned, don't insult another man's wife. What's also interesting about this whole situation is Teresa sticking by Danielle's side through this whole thing. And it's pretty obvious at a certain point earlier in the episode when they first get to the party and Danielle and Teresa sit outside and Danielle asks, you know, who's talking about me in there? And Teresa's pretty honest with her, saying that, yeah, they are talking, that she brings drama when she's around. And it's really funny to watch Danielle sort of like gas up Teresa.
You know who I am. You know what I'm about. And you are Teresa Giudice, and you don't let anyone tell you what to do.
What the fuck is
Barbara
Joseph
to dictate to Teresa Giudice?
You can sort of see exactly what their dynamic is, and that's Danielle being like, you're Teresa Giudice. You don't need anyone to tell you anything. You are your own boss. And Teresa's like, yeah, yeah, you're right. And she starts to feel a little bit more macho, I feel like, because Danielle is like talking her up. And I think Teresa's not even remembering exactly what unfolded, but she's getting a little blinded and caught up in Danielle sort of egging her on and boosting her ego a little bit. So even after the whole situation with the pool and everything that unfolds, like Teresa is still adamant that she's going to bring Danielle around. And this is after everyone at the party is sort of like, why don't you see it? Like Danielle is the one who is causing these problems. And Teresa's, you know, very stubborn about it. She's like, I'm going to bring Danielle around. And if you guys don't want to come around, then don't. So I don't know. I want to know exactly how their friendship is today. And I'm excited to see at the reunion, you know, obviously a lot of this stuff is going to come up and we know that Danielle makes an appearance. So it'll be interesting to see what their alliance looks like now and how that is going forward. And so going back to the beginning of the episode, one thing that I did want to point out too that I was really glad we got a little bit of a resolution on is the situation between Bill and Jennifer and sort of their parenting skills. And, you know, they go to Hibachi, which, again, a lot of times there's weird running themes in Housewives. And we have, you know, Tanya's Hibachi grill in her basement on Real Housewives of Atlanta. Now we've got Jennifer out at Hibachi with her five kids and Bill. But I was glad to see them out to dinner. And, you know, we saw one of those instances that we've seen all season where Olivia is like, Mom, if you buy me two things from Target, I will finish my soup. And she's like, okay. And you'll actually hear later on in the interview, Jennifer talks a little bit about her mentality and why she does that. And it's sort of like she promises them things, but then doesn't deliver just to get them to do what she wants. So it is what it is.
I promise I will finish all my soup.
Okay.
That's for real? That's being spoiled.
Listen, I spoiled them a little bit. I mean, sue me.
You know, that job is to work, to provide. So you should be the disciplinarian in the family.
All right, but can I just bring up an issue? When you have free time and you choose not to spend it with us, that hurts my feelings and I'm sad for my kids.
So do you feel that no adult should have adult friends?
Why does it have to be one or the other? Why can't we find a balance?
It'll come. You got your family and you got your friends. Half family, half friends, okay? Your family is just a little higher.
Of course.
Can I say something? You know how like you said like you're a role model for me?
Right.
I feel like I don't really see it that much because you're not around.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm not around as much. I can do better about that.
So finally, Jennifer kind of brings up to him, like, here's the thing, like, I need your help more often. And it was really great to see Jennifer's two older kids also step in and say, you know, his son is like, you tell me that you're supposed to be my role model, but I need to see you around a lot more. So that was really great to see. And then the oldest daughter, who we end up seeing at the anniversary party, is also like, you can have your friends and you can have your family, but your family has to just take a little bit more priority. So it is interesting. You know, we kind of talked about it earlier in the episode with Vanderpump Rules, that no matter how old you get as a parent, you can always be learning from your children. So Jennifer gets a little bit more into it, too, when you'll hear later on in her interview talking about how her relationship with Bill has sort of evolved since being on the show and how their parenting has sort of developed a little bit further. So with the Real Housewives of New Jersey reunion coming up next Wednesday, we are going to be releasing a bonus episode that's basically a primer for the reunion. So it features all of the housewives talking about this season. It's everything you need to know so you're ready for the reunion on Wednesday. In honor of Valentine's Day, the Vanderpump Rules cast sent us some really sweet Valentines, including one from Sheena, and congrats to you, she has a new single out.
Hey Daily Dish Podcast, it's Kristen Doty.
It's Ariana.
Hi guys, it's Stassi.
Happy Valentine's Day from your girl Sheena Marie.
What up, Daily Dish Podcast? Happy Valentine's Day to you and to all the listeners.
All of our fans.
Happy Valentine's Day to Megan and Eric and my dear Tom.
Happy Valentine's Day to everyone at the Daily Dish and to my Bobo.
And a special shout out to my sweet peach, Stassi Schroeder.
Check out my new song, Better Without You, available on iTunes now. Mwah.
Happy Valentine's Day from James Kennedy. And remember, it's not about the pasta, it's about love.
So not to toot my own horn, but people are always saying, you smell amazing, what are you wearing? So I'm lucky because thanks to Scentbird, I've been able to mix and match a ton of designer fragrances. Scentbird is a luxury fragrance subscription service for perfumes and colognes. It's a way for you to discover new fragrances without buying an entire bottle. There are more than 450 designer brands for you to choose from: Prada, Tom Ford, Versace, Cartier. Try the brands you want. It's the real deal. My taste can be expensive, and sometimes I end up with a shelf full of half-used bottles, or I've been wearing too many of the same fragrances for years. So with Scentbird, I found a way to have great taste and mix up my fragrance routine without breaking the bank. Just this last month, I ordered English Laundry Oxford Blue, John Varvatos Dark Rebel, Prada Luna Rosa, and Versace Dylan Blue. What's really cool about Scentbird is you can go on to the website and take the True Scent Quiz to discover more personalized recommendations for your taste. You can choose the perfume you want to try, and they send you a 30-day supply. That's 120 sprays, enough to apply more than 4 times a day for the whole month. So we're offering an exclusive offer for our listeners. You can get 50% off your first month today. That's only $7.50 for your first fragrance. Go to scentbird.com/dish and use my code DISH for 50% off your first month. Again, that's scentbird.com, scentbird.com/dish, and try your first perfume or cologne for just $7.50. Sign on and smell amazing. So knowing that the reunion is coming up, we sat down with Jennifer Iden from Real Housewives of New Jersey, and she talked a little bit about her behavior over the course of the season, some of her perhaps regrets, and a little bit more about how her family has dealt with all of the aftermath from the show. So here's that interview.
Guys, we are here with Jennifer Iden. Thank you so much for coming back to the podcast.
It's so great to be here.
Thank you. I'm so glad you're back, because when we talked last time, it was very new, right?
Yeah.
Like, you were just, the show was just starting to air. Mm-hmm. Now we're about to be finished.
I was the new kid on the block, and I had no idea what was going to come out of all of our filming adventures. And so, now I'm privy to it.
So. Now, at the end of the season, how are you feeling about everything?
You know what? I feel great. I don't care. I think we've had an amazing season. I have made myself chuckle. My husband literally spit out his coffee watching the show in a good way. He couldn't wait to watch the following week. It's been a great season, and I'm very proud of it. Even the bad things. It's all right. I own it. A few things, obviously, I wasn't so happy about. You know, like Oklahoma, I noticed, like, it did seem I was bragging a lot. But you have to understand, like, my perspective of it coming into this new group of ladies. I had just moved into my house 6 months before I started filming. It was very new to me, and it took me 3 years to build. Plus, their husbands are all contractors. So they ask me. And when they ask me about my house, one of the things that's great about me and one of the things that's bad about me is I'm extremely forthright. And I tell everybody. And I, you know, it's like, oh, people will even come to my house and be like, oh, I wonder how big this house is, because they're too shy to ask. So I step in there. I think I'm doing people a solid. I'm like, well, it's 20,000 square feet. It's got 9 bedrooms and 16 bathrooms. And then it's like, now all of a sudden from the outside looking in, it could be perceived as bragging. However, anyone I talk to about my house, anyone that I have more than, is always going to seem like I'm bragging, you know? So I just... then what? I don't speak? That's not me. I was born with the gift of gab, can I say.
Well, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about Mexico and everything that went down there. So mm-hmm. can you talk a little bit about what happened on that trip? Especially
oh my God.
That last dinner.
I fought with everybody on Mexico. I felt like everybody was on me. Like, nobody was drinking tequila with me. Nobody was in their happy place. So, of course, if everybody else is sober and I'm the only drunk one, obviously I'm the only one having fun, but maybe that's in my own little world because nobody else perceived it that way. Yeah, so what did we fight about the first night? Okay, so the necklace, I would love to clarify. So my issue was not that they went to another jeweler. My issue was that they were asking me to chip in for another jeweler. You know, if I knew that they were going to buy a custom-made piece and then they were asking me to ante up, that would be my time to say, you know what? You guys want to use that jeweler? My brother's actually a jeweler, so I'll just do my own thing. I'd rather not ante up for that. And also, before we had that dinner, Margaret was complimenting my lips, just, you know, coincidentally. She was like, wow, your lips look really good, and does your husband inject them? And listen, I've always had a good base, but yeah, my husband's a plastic surgeon. Every 6 months, I get a little, you know, pick-me-up. And she was complimenting them, and I also told her, oh, I like to line my lips a little deeper. That's like my signature thing. She was like, oh, they look great. So like now at our dinner scene, when she came out with that insult, my response was, a monkey's ass that you sucked is because 2 seconds ago you were just kissing my ass about my lips. Now all of a sudden they're a monkey's asshole. And I looked at that baboon's ass. I thought it was pretty cute. Okay. And I thought that that's what women aspire to look like when they come into my husband's office and want injections. So, you know what? Pink and plump, baby.
Now, has anyone been to your brother since then? Have you seen a spike in sales or anything like that?
He has.
Really?
He's had some, you know, we've been in the jewelry business for generations. And when my parents came over, that was my dad's goal to have his own store, which he did. My brother and I grew up helping customers. Like, it was a family business. We've had customers that haven't come to us in years. Just kind of the show has given it a rebirth. And it's like, oh my God, I remember them. And they come in and, you know, they're spending money and business is up for my brother, which my brother's business sustains my parents' livelihood. It's one family business that takes care of them. So that matters to me. Of course I'm going to care. It's not, maybe it's a loss of sale for you, but to my brother, like, that's what puts food on the table. So yeah, I'm not going to give another jeweler the business. Now, I buy costume jewelry. I think nothing's wrong with costume jewelry. All my Chanel is costume. Like, you're going to really, a lot of my costume is a lot more expensive than most people's regular jewelry. All right. So, and costume is so hot right now, especially being in the jewelry business. You have to learn how to evolve with the trends. Everyone's wearing these big ass chandelier earrings. That's not real. That's very good quality, high-end costume jewelry. So why would it be insulting to buy costume jewelry for a friend? Like, I wouldn't think that's insulting. And if you're going to buy a custom-made piece, I'd rather not chip in for it. That's like someone coming to buy Botox gift card for someone and then saying, hey, Jen, can you give me $500 for that Botox gift card that we're going to go to Dr. X for? I'd be like, no, I'm not giving it to you. Get your own gift card. I'm going to my husband. And that was really that. And that really didn't come across, I feel. So I would like to clear that up.
What was maybe the most hurtful misconception from fans this season?
Oh, my God, that I am a materialistic, pretentious snob. I mean, I went to China for my furniture. What about that says pretentious? I mean, you wanna call me cheap? I feel like cheap is maybe a negative word for practical, but I'd rather have that than be the pretentious, materialistic snob that only cares about money. That is so far from the truth. I mean, I'm the most hospitable person. I always tell my kids, like, we invite people over, we feed everybody. I mean, this It's like nothing. Everyone tells me, oh, you're not going to take it to the grave. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I help all my siblings. I help my parents, my sister. I mean, I help everybody. Like, I'm the one who pulls in all the strings. I remember when I first moved into my house that I had before this, the movers that came in, I became friends with one of the movers. I hired him to put my swing set together. And then when he got arrested for something, right? Go figure. Don't know him. Never heard of him, but he was very nice. His girlfriend called me and said, could you give us $300 to, like, bail him out of jail? And I didn't have money, mind you. This was the beginning of my husband's journey. And I was like, you have nobody else to call? And she's like, no, but he's my baby daddy and he's in jail. And I felt bad and I gave it to them. Like, that is so far from the truth. So I was prepared for people to not like me. I just was not prepared for them to not like me for the reasons that are so not the truth.
In terms of other misconceptions, do you feel like your culture, just given with, the situation with Margaret, like, is there anything you want to sort of clarify?
Sure. So a lot of people think that I need permission from my husband to do anything. That is so far from the truth. Anything I ask my husband is purely out of common respect and courtesy and the love I have for him. It's like, hey, I'm doing this. I hope you're okay with that. Obviously, I had already booked my trip to Oklahoma. I was already going on that trip. It was not open for discussion. But there's a courtesy there. I would not like him coming home saying, like, oh, by the way, I'm going for a bachelor party this weekend with my boys. No, there's a bachelor party going on. I was thinking about going. What do you think about that? And that's just respect that you have in any relationship. That's not because someone's like a dictator or anything like that. I rule that house. I did everything. My husband has no idea what we spent on the house. He has, like, I take care of everything. He just pays the bills.
We see in the finale episode that you and the kids sort of ask him to spend more time with the family.
Yeah.
Has he stuck to that?
He has. He has. And you know what? He's been such a great partner through this whole journey. I mean, he was a little reluctant in the beginning only because he was worried that something was going to take my time away from him and the kids. But, I mean, he's loving it. He's loving all the accolades. He's drinking the Kool-Aid. I mean, there's a little extra skip in his step. He's all over me. He's very touchy-feely. I mean, we're going to Miami this weekend together. And then next weekend, we're doing an Orlando trip with the kids. So, I mean, he's definitely stepping up to the plate. And now he makes little jokes. He's like, hey, you know, if you make enough money, I can retire and I can stay home with the kids all day.
So are you buying fewer gifts for the kids now?
You know, this is another thing, another misconception. So I say yes to my kids at everything, but I don't follow through with everything. There's a big difference. And when you have children, you'll understand. Because their attention span is like, you know, it's fly. It's like flies. It goes away. They'll watch something on YouTube. They'll bring it to me and they'll say, Mommy, can you buy me this? And I'll say, oh, yes. Screenshot it. Screenshot it so Mommy has it, okay? And then they're like, yes. And then they go to the next video. And then they come to me with the next new toy. And then the phone is just filled with screenshots of toys that they will never have. Okay, so I just yes them for the most part because chances are they're going to find something new that's going to take up their attention within minutes and they're going to forget about the old toy. So I do give gifts, but I give like 10% of what I say yes to. I say yes to 100%, 10 I only actually follow through and I can afford it. So what, I'm not going to take it to the grave. If I cannot use this money that I have to give my kids joy, then what's the purpose of it? Like, you're not going to enjoy it when you're dead.
Have you seen Bill kind of step up and be more of a disciplinarian to help you out since the season?
When he's home, yeah, absolutely. When he's home, listen. And the thing is with Bill, all he has to say it once. Me, the kids know they can get away with, like, you know, getting on their hands and knees, giving a little cry, but I'll give you a hug and kiss, Mommy. They know that they can get me like that. But with Bill, that's not going to fly. So all he has to say is, like, Olivia, go to bed. And that is it. He'd give those angry eyebrows and they are gone. So that's good. Good.
Well, I want to get into the reunion because I know you guys filmed it. So yeah. I just want to know, how was it as your first reunion?
I mean, listen, I always feel like you need to dress the part of the person you want to be. So I actually got this like boxing robe made, custom made boxing robe, which I'll post the day the reunion airs. And I came in there and I was just like, you know, ready, like pumped up. I was like ready for these women. I was definitely nervous, you know, because I don't know. I've been a fan of the show for years, and I've seen like people come up with like, you know, stacks of paper and private investigators and text messages. And I just had no idea what was going to come at me. I'm like, I don't know. Are these women like ruthless, or, you know, am I coming into the lion's den over here? So I was definitely nervous. But I feel like we spoke about everything. There were a lot of heated moments. There were a lot of bittersweet moments, and just like a lot of shocking revelations that you guys will see.
Who are you still talking to after the reunion?
You're going to have to watch the reunion see who hashed it out and who didn't.
Well, okay, last question. Yeah. Did you guys all go out together as a group after the reunion?
Not right after the reunion, but time does heal all wounds. So we were all together for Andy's baby shower, as you know, which was like the epic Super Bowl of Housewives. I mean, it was surreal. Jerry O'Connell spoke to me. And I was just like, you know, he's like, I'm a huge fan. I just kind of looked behind me right and left like, Who are you talking to? Me? He's like, yeah, you make me laugh and everything. I was like, really? Oh, well, then go on with your bad self. So that was surreal. And we were hanging out, and it was a place drama-free. So we got to go out, and I hung out with Marge, and we're in a good place. Jackie and I are in a good place. We're good.
Great.
I'm ready for next season if they'll have me.
Oh, we are too.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're
this
welcome.
Was amazing.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Okay. We're pretty lucky here at Bravo HQ because we're kind of allowed to wear anything we want to work as long as it's appropriate. But have you ever been in a situation where you felt uncomfortable in your work attire? Who says comfy can't be work appropriate? Beta Brand wants you to look good and feel good, even at the office. So Beta Brand has dress pant yoga pants that feature ultra comfy styles designed to impress. Not only are these pants wrinkle resistant, but they have amazing details like faux zippers, pockets, front buttons, and belt loops. You can also get them in a number of different styles: boot cut, straight leg, skinny, cropped, and more. They come in standard colors like black, navy, gray, khaki. Plus, there are seasonal and limited edition colors released every single month. Beta Brand also listens to their shoppers, and they connect shoppers and designers to bring new ideas to life. They take feedback and bring crowdsourced ideas straight into the design room. Shoppers can vote for designs to become crowdfunded projects on the site. Plus, there are hundreds of designer and thousands of designs on their site so far. Millions of people agree that they're the most comfortable pants you'll ever wear to work without sacrificing professionalism. So that's betabrand.com, BETABRAND.com/dish to get 20% off your dress pant yoga pants. So Valentine's Day, we're feeling the love. So basically, we wanted to go back and catch up with the millionaire matchmaker herself, Patty Stanger. So we talked to her a little bit about what she's been up to lately, her new psychic abilities. We got some predictions from her about some famous celebrity couples and where she thinks they're headed. Plus, she gave the dish a little bit on some of our favorite Bravo celebrities and their relationships. So this was a lot of fun. Check it out.
Guys, we are here with Patty Stanger, which, Patty, I have to say, it is such a treat to talk to you as a Bravo fan from the beginning. So excited.
Thanks. Thank you.
And we're recording with you via Skype, we should say. So we're always excited to talk to you because you give amazing celebrity relationship predictions, but also we hear that you have some psychic abilities.
I've always had that on the show. I mean, that's what you saw when I was in the hot seat and the person I was interviewing, you know, like I would pick up vibrational frequencies, like on so many celebrities, so many people who are non-celebrities. I just knew what their issues were. I've been doing that my whole life. I actually ran the Kenny Kingston Psychic Network for 8 years and was a practicing psychic for 10 in Florida before I even ventured into matchmaking. So yeah, that's part of like what I do.
How did you first know you were psychic?
I'm adopted, and I had a very keen sense of awareness in my adopted family, like when someone was going to die or break up a new marriage, or there was a big scandal in my family. I knew that two people were cheating when I was like 9 years old, and I knew when my grandmother was going to die, and I told my grandmother not to have an operation because she was going to die. She died 2 days later. So stuff like that. And I also can feel earthquakes and hurricanes. I get really bad headaches when the weather changes, the barometric pressure changes. I know there's going to be a catastrophe. Before 9/11, I had the worst stomach ache for 7 days, and I had this anxiety like I never saw, and I kept saying, something bad's going to happen, something bad's going to happen, something bad's going to happen. And then boom, you know? Wow. But sometimes I don't know what it is. Like, in other words, like, I had the experience of not getting on a plane and it crashed. I had the experience of not getting a plane and it was hijacked. Like, weird shit like that. Yeah.
So obviously that psychic ability has probably really played into your professional career in terms of being a matchmaker. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something maybe a lot of viewers didn't know back then. So it makes a lot of sense now.
We just didn't tell a lot of the psychic stuff because it wasn't mainstream at the time. It was pre-Secret. You know, Secret wasn't out. People didn't really talk about it. You know, if it wasn't for Oprah, you know, really putting the spirituality out on the map, I don't think anybody would have listened, you know? And then I think towards season 8, we did do some spiritual stuff in there. I think I read Stephanie Pratt's astrology, and I helped with Ali Shapiro. I taught her how to use a pendulum. But I can't remember if everything made edit or went into the after show, you know, like, you know, when we do the little snippets online. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the full show if we showed it. But I did do that. I remember I had to read a really strong astrology on Stephanie Pratt, and she was blown away. And I do that. I take the charts, and I'll look at the two people. We had an instance with Mitch Berger. He picked the wrong girl, and I said, don't pick this girl. This is a bad astrological thing for you. And he went with the right girl, and he ended up marrying her, having a baby. That was a big football player on the show.
Wow, right. Well, so yeah. Knowing that, we wanted to run some celebrity couples by you and okay. See if we could get some predictions.
Sure, no problem.
Well, okay. I think the couple everyone's talking about right now is Pete Davidson and Kate Beckinsale.
I kind of, look, she likes quirky people. I'll give her that. But is this a relevant situation? Is it, like, I think he thinks he won the lottery and the jackpot. And it's like, F you to Ariana, because come on, right? It's too quick, too soon, and it's the better version of Ariana. It's the hotter version, and it's a more age-appropriate version. But I don't know if this thing's going to last. I think this is like a relevance carpet thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I hate saying nasty stuff like that, so please don't yell at me on that, who's listening, because I just don't see this going the distance. Let's put it that way.
Well, I don't think you are alone in that.
Okay. Yeah. I don't want to. I mean, I think they're having a fun time. I think he's like, F you. He is so hurt over the crash and burn situation. He's going to take the biggest fish on the carpet to go screw you. And who better than Kate? Because I don't think, I mean, she is the bar in beauty. So what are you going to do?
It's so
everybody
true.
Would do. Any guy would have done it. I think she likes quirky types, though. You know, I really think she's into like the, what do they call that? Sexy, ugly types. You know?
Absolutely. So,
okay.
What about Catherine McPhee and David Foster?
Okay, this is, you know, this is really interesting. I talked to David when he broke up with Yolanda. And I was going to fix him up with my friend. We had a long conversation on the phone. And I knew he wanted younger girls. It was written all over his face. But I know that the first thing he said to me is, Patty, if you fix me up with anybody, they got to be able to love my music and maybe even sing with me. Like, you know, he plays music and sing. She loves older men. If you look at their previous marriage, she's obsessed with older men. This is probably in her chart. I've never done her chart. But you can actually see if she had Saturn in the seventh house, she probably likes older men. So this is a good thing. I don't know how. I mean, he's so many years older. He'll die earlier than her. That's for sure. So this might be her second marriage, and she might have a third after that because she's so young. But it's great because they love to sing. They have one thing in common, which is like undeniable, which is music. And when you have something as strong as that, that is a glue in a relationship. The daughters love her. The foster sisters love her. I mean, he's having fun. She's having fun. Nobody's getting hurt. Why not?
A couple everyone is talking about is Jennifer Lopez and A-Rod.
Okay, why are they not married? Financially, they both can afford it, right? So, look, I love J-Lo more than anyone. I think she is my bar for beauty. And she is a hardworking woman, and they are perfect for each other. Twinsies. But they might have a fear of marriage because she's been married several times, and it's never worked out. And it might be one of those where the marriage goes downhill. After they get married, like the sex goes out the window and the romance goes away. She might have a major fear on this. And he might be like, I already had a marriage. That was a terrible divorce. I'm still paying through the nose through it. So I think they'll last. I think they have a lot in common. You know, I think she helped clean up his act. You know, I remember I went to a Yankee store in New York. My ex-boyfriend is a Yankee fan, and the A-Rod t-shirts and sweatshirts were all around the wall. And the salespeople kept saying, Patty, buy this for your boyfriend. He's a Yankee guy. And I'm like, A-Rod? No way. You know, back in the day, right? We all thought that. Now she's redeemed him. So I think they're really good together. I don't think she's going to get better than that, to be honest with you.
And they have the New York connection. I mean, that's huge.
And it's like they've got the Latin, the New York, their kids love each other. You know, everybody doesn't have to get married to make a relationship perfect. My ex-boyfriend's parents got divorced, and they didn't find anyone after the divorce, and they dated each other till his father died. I've seen this a lot, because what happens is when we end up getting married, sometimes we take them for granted, and the romance goes out the window. So kudos to them. I think it's a really good couple.
What about Chris Pratt and Katherine Schwarzenegger?
This is an unusual situation. You know, I love that Maria was the matchmaker, and she can call me anytime when she doesn't want to do her day job. But I love the fact that they're faith-based. So I knew Anna. I was supposed to meet Chris the night I went to Anna's house to do the podcast, but I think he was in Seattle doing some kind of job or something. And he had given his, you know, love to me through Anna. And I just feel there's a religious factor. They go to church a lot. Okay, you notice that? Mm-hmm. So, and there's a big age difference, like an 11, 12 years age difference. He's ready for more kids. He's ready to settle down. She wants that. You know, he took his time. You know, in faith-based, they go fast. They go like 6 months and they're done. Like in the Jewish religion, it's 4 dates and, you know, you get married in the Orthodox side. So they're faith-based, and this is the glue in their relationship. I think this is going to be a long haul on that one.
So we also just have to ask about the Kardashians, because, I mean, they are queens of the relationship drama.
Where are they? Okay, can we just kick Khloe's f***ing ass? I know Khloe before she dated one athlete when I met her, when they had the Dash store. I used to go to Dash, and I used to go to the cheese shop next door and have lunch, and then I'd sit with her. And she goes, I'm never going to date a sports star again. She has not learned her lesson. This guy is an asshole. Come on. You're pregnant. He's flirting. He's cheating. And she keeps taking him back, like she's reinventing the wheel. You know, the definition of insanity is do the same thing over and over, get the same result. Why doesn't she listen? She is stunning. What she's done with herself, her business, she's the hardest working girl you'll ever meet. And she always wanted a child. It's like, move the fuck on and get somebody else. Really. Seriously. And try not to date any of the sports guys. You know, there's too much temptation in the water with those guys.
So we wanted to get into some of our favorite Bravo lebs now. So, can we talk about...
And there are people I probably know.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, well, we wanted...
Okay, is that why you're using me for this now? I know why. Okay, go on.
Well, first we wanted to ask about Jill Zarin and her new boyfriend.
Well, I know them very well. You know, she's my best friend. Mm-hmm. I love Gary. I think he's awesome. I think God sent her, him. They were friends and played tennis. She didn't cross the line until, you know, Bobby died. And she had a lot of guilt over it. But, you know, they're like twins. They're kind of like A-Rod and J-Lo. They have so much in common that it's like friends and family and Florida. Lots of Florida and lots of tennis. So this is a good fit. I see her getting married next year with him.
Wow.
I thought it would have been earlier. I predicted the ring on Valentine's Day, and she pushed it away because it was too soon after Bobby's year anniversary. But I predict it's coming soon. Yeah.
Well,
yeah. And Gary, you know to call me because I know what kind of ring she wants. There you go.
Okay. So for the Real Housewives of New York City, fans saw in the trailer of the new season that Ramona's flirting with Mario again. Do you think?
No. No.
No. No.
Mario is fickle pickle. As much as Mario is adorable and cute and all that, he come here, come there. She probably would take him back. Let's be that. You got to remember, she has a child with him. She has history with him. Ramona loved him, okay? But I don't see him going back to where he was before. I don't. So Ramona, I warn you now, no more Mario. Even if it's good sex and you had a great life with him, you need to go to somebody else.
Well, we also have Denise Richards joining the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills this season. And she just got married.
She's my bud, yeah.
Yeah, what about her and her new husband?
Well, he used to date my friend Tracy Bregman from Young and the Restless. They actually lived together, and she brought him here from Canada. I think this is a good fit. I like that, you know, he's a spiritual warrior. He's got a good business. He loves those girls. I mean, she has a special needs child, the youngest one that she adopted. So I think this is a really good fit. I think this will last. I think Denise needed a steady guy that wasn't a rocker, an actor, and, you know, it was out of the fray. And I think he supports her, and I think they have great sex, because look at those pictures we saw, right? Mm-hmm. Come on.
Yeah.
That was like, when's the movie coming out? That's all I want to know. I think this is a good fit for her. Yeah. You know who is a really good match? I'm going to have dinner with him the next 2 weeks. Is Dina Manzo. I love her. I love her fiancé. Love him. Love him. I love everything about them. I'm so proud of her. You know, she did not have it easy. She was dating around, and she was just like, I give up, Patty. So I love her. I think she made a good choice. She did a good choice thing, you know? So I think we're going to get together soon. And I don't know. And I'm glad that – oh, and I'm also happy for Bethany. I'm super happy for Bethany. I love this guy for her. Love him. Love him, love him, love him, love him. It's finally time she met someone at her own financial level who has kids, who understands her lifestyle. Love it. That's a good one.
Well, Valentine's Day is in the air, so a lot of people are going to be wondering – for those who want to meet the one in 2019, what should they start doing ASAP to get on track?
Well, this business that it's not, you know, it's ride or die, is this, we got to stop this. We need to make dating fun again. When is the last time you went on a fun date? Because it's so serious now. Oh my God, are you on every app? And are you getting that person? And it's like the pressure, forget the whole girl thing where the eggs are dying and men's sperm is decreasing at the same rate. This pressure to get perfection has got to stop. We're all into perfection right now. So the thing that I tell women right now is that don't talk to your girlfriends about who you're dating. Keep it separate. Not until you know it's a serious relationship. 3 months, and then you can discuss it. 20% should be the apps. Only 20%. I'm a big app fan, but I don't want you going all in, and that is the only way. You need to go to functions by yourself. So I have an assistant who's gorgeous and 30. She couldn't get arrested in love. And I said, this week you're going to do my plan. And she went out on her own, because men are attracted to women who are out on their own. They're not attracted when you're in a group. So she met like 6 guys. And she went to the gym, she went to the farmer's market, she did everything by herself, and guys were coming up to her left and right. Even, you don't have to be stunning to do this. You don't have to be a 10. You just have to go out by yourself and smile. And nobody does that. They go in groups. And then the women, men don't want to buy the girls drinks, the full group, and, you know, it's a whole thing. Also, get off your phone. Can we put our phones away? If you don't have a child and, you know, and the babysitter's watching the kid, you can put your phone away or put it on vibrate. You can do that. It's not a difficult thing. I went to the most famous place in L.A. called Elefante last week. Packed, music, like South Beach kind of place. Every single person was on their phone. Nobody was looking up. So it's everyone's responsibility to look up and get off their phone.
I think that's great advice.
And for women, where there's meat, there's really rich men. So if you go to a steakhouse at 5 o'clock to have a martini and sit at the bar and get to know the bartender, you're going to meet men there, because men go to those places by themselves to eat a steak.
What if you're a vegetarian?
That's a big Well, we have Cafe Gratitude here, and we have Irwan, which is my favorite little place. But, you know. What am I going to tell you?
Right.
It's like, go to Whole Foods? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like steakhouses are notorious for money, because men spend a lot of money. But in L.A., like, we have Craig's now. So Craig's, half of the menu is vegan. So you get both sides of the street, and it's a really high-end restaurant. Maybe sushi. The old days of the sushi bar, sitting at the sushi bar by yourself, you might meet someone. You got to get out. You got to make 3 times a week that you go out. It can't be 1. It can't be 2. It could be once in the week and 2 on the weekends. It could be a day thing and a night thing. You took a bike ride. You went to the beach to get, you know, a soda. You can do that. But you got to go out 3 times. And you can't constantly be conscious of looking for love. That's another bad thing. That blocks the energy. So if you're going to do something that you like to do, you go to a seminar, you know, you go to a yoga class, you're enjoying that. If a guy's there, fine. Saturday, I'm doing a digital series for Alex Nanny, the jewelry company. it's kind of like girls want to know questions that women want to know. And we had a panel of five guys. And, you know, I was just being Patty Stanger. I wasn't playing, you know, I'm single now, I'm dating. And like one of the guys asked me out and I was in shock. I went out with him last night and I was like, what? Like, I wasn't even focused on, even the guys were cute and I wasn't even focused on them. I was focused on my doing my job. And that's generally when it happens. When you're so into what you're doing, it's so attractive energetically to the opposite sex or same sex. It doesn't matter if it's gay or straight. It's attracting because you're not focusing on the love that you can't get and you're not in heat. Heat is where it goes wrong.
Well, that's great advice. Thank you for that. The last thing we wanted to ask is, do you still talk to Destin and Rachel or Chelsea or any of your former team members?
Nope.
Patty, thank you so much. This was such a treat.
Thanks so. It was so great coming back home, guys. I love my Bravo. Just keeps getting better and better. Like, I'm really into New York right now. I can't wait for New York.
Yes.
That's my favorite one. Now, it used to be Beverly Hills. I'm sorry, Beverly Hills, but New York is where they're all single. I'm friends with them all. I'm always wondering what they're going to do next. You know, they're always throwing a curveball at me. So I'm really rooting for all the girls this season that they all find love. Well, anyway, happy Valentine's Day. I hope everyone finds love this year. And, you know, just keep positive. It's about being positive. That's when your energy is glowing, is when the love starts going, you know?
Oh, I like
yes.
that.
Okay?
Thanks, right, Patty.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So now it's time for Rose and Thorn.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
So my Rose this week, and actually for the last few weeks, is Margaret. I think Margaret is the MVP of this season of Real Housewives of New Jersey, and I think she really just proved it in this last episode by pushing Marty into the pool. She's done two things this season that I've always wanted to do, and that's throw a drink on someone and push someone into a pool. So Margaret, thank you for delivering for us this season, and I'm so excited to see what you bring to the reunion. My Thorn is from The Real Housewives of Atlanta, and it's that awkwardness right before the bachelorette party really turned up in Tokyo.
There you go.
Hello, everybody! Welcome, welcome, bride! Hello, Eva.
You are animated.
I'm just so happy to have you all here. Welcome to Eva's Bachelorette Party.
Konnichiwa.
Ladies, konnichiwa. We are all here. We have flown 14 hours to celebrate you in Tokyo. So thank you for coming tonight. I have some really funny stuff planned for us, and I think we're just going to turn up.
Tanya is super sweet, and I adore her, but she was perhaps trying just a little bit too hard, and I understand that she was bringing the energy, trying to get the girls excited. There was a bit of a dark cloud in the air, just given everything that happened with Nene and Greg and then Eva's grandfather, so I understand why she prioritized, like, we're going to turn up, here's some penis straws, like, let's do this, I got a stripper coming. The awkwardness was just so palpable before all of the girls really bought in and decided to turn up. So thank goodness for the pickle game, because that really changed everything up. And I appreciate it, Tanya, but those couple of moments before the stripper showed up, and even when the stripper was there, it was a little awkward. Well, guys, thanks for joining me this week, and I'll talk to you next Thursday.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long, not just Thursdays. You can find us on Twitter or Instagram at Bravo TV.
Don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack, E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out. You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
TTYL.
Bye.
Bye.
And I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy. Miss me.